Hot round! Red 7, red 7, red 7! Don!
What?
Red 7!
I don't know what red 7 means.
Hot round!
I don't. What is hot round?
Will you just go stand on the other side, please?
Billy Bob! This is it! The man who got us here, you ready?
You don't think that lame ass play where I run downfield and act like I'm lost is gonna work, do you?
Then he pivots, fakes, chucks the big bomb halfway down the field to our hopefully still wide open tailback. I call it the annexation of Puerto Rico.
Booyah! That's what we call a sack lunch. Nom, 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 nom.
I need that ball. Get me the ball.
You need the ball.
Get me the ball.
Get you the ball.
Are you gonna get me the
ball? I'll get you the ball.
Get me the ball.
I hope he didn't kill somebody.
Because we know when we add up all those inches, that's going to make the difference between winning and losing. Between living and dying.
I got a whole lot of money. Money. Y'all it for me. Bottle keep popping that water, man.
The dust has settled on the NFL draft and 11 personnel is here to talk about all of the action from Las Vegas. I'm Nick Roush, joined by Adam Luckett, where four Wildcats went off the board, three a little higher expected, one unexpected fall. But this draft, we got a little bit of everything, Luckett, and even though there weren't any Wildcats to hear their names called on Thursday night, that was about as bananas as you can get for a first round.
Yeah, we had a lot of trades, blockbuster trades outside the draft to receivers, and then teams trading up for receivers, quarterbacks disappearing in the draft. It was a wild, wild couple hours there on Thursday. And the draft, the NFL, just in general, they just find a way usually to deliver. They've turned in reading cards off a piece of paper into like this spectacle every April Thursday in April every year, where it's just a primetime must-see event. I mean, it certainly delivered. I think this year we had our fair share of surprises, interesting developments. The A.J. Brown trade came out of nowhere for me. We were expecting maybe a blockbuster wide receiver trade, Debo Samuel, San Francisco 49ers, maybe getting involved somewhere. But we weren't expecting it to come from the Tennessee Titans. And so that was a big shocker to the system. And then when you look at the draft, defense heavy there at the beginning. And then when the run arm wide receiver started, everyone got crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I kind of think the pick of Cole Strange there at the end of the first round,
man,
by the
bizarre
Patriots was kind of a sign of things to come. I think for the next 2 days of the draft, there were a lot of teams that were just, they were kind of all over the place, off the board, not really close to the consensus.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that had something to do with why you saw a couple Kentucky guys there at the end go undrafted as well. For the people in the media scouting, I would say, there at the end, they were just it's hard when you scout that many guys, right?
Right, right.
And they're not giving up that much information. Some of these teams, you don't know the medicals, all of that. But there's got like, Yusuf Corker and Darryl Rosenthal felt like pretty safe draft picks for Kentucky.
Yeah.
I'd have been willing to bet a lot of money that both of them would have got drafted.
And especially Dare, just on traits alone, and potential
right
upside.
Well, yeah, especially late in the rounds, because that's what the late rounds are. It's really you're betting on
upside. You just roll the dice, yeah.
And so, yeah, that was a big surprise that both those guys went undrafted.
Yeah, let's before we get into specifically the Kentucky guys, why some fell and everything, I wanted to just big picture, some big picture takeaways. First off, on Thursday night, I just bounced around to all of the channels, to all three. And first and foremost, ESPN had the worst of all of the broadcasting crews. Each one had somebody that just wasn't good on there where you're like, why is this guy on television? Like Charles Cross of the NFL Network was just like, who can we get to say the most boring stuff, period? But like ESPN, it was let's pick a guy and let's immediately get into the hot take game. And it was just not like you couldn't even let the pick breathe. ABC got a little bit, they're a little bit on the hokier side. Look at with the sob stories and stuff like that. But they at least, and same thing with Daniel Jeremiah would talk about the good of the player before they would kind of, well, this is why he's not as good. You know, I thought ESPN's was just, it was just horrendous between Booger and you had Mike Greenberg. Like, I don't need more Mike Greenberg on my television. ESPN has found a way to shoehorn Mike Greenberg into every single thing they do. I don't know when that man sleeps, but I actually enjoyed a little bit of the ABC one with McShay on there and Desmond Howard, because it felt like I was watching College Game Day with Reese Davis up there, and it was fun. It was fun. It was lighthearted. And to the point about the trades and stuff, I love the drama of it all. The drama was just electrifying, because they would kind of tease you with breaks here and there. It's like, oh, we've got another Blockbuster trade, we've got to talk about it. So you flip the channel, you check your phone, and then you kind of gasp. It was an electric event, even though it wasn't always time the most pleasing to the eye. Like, I don't need Tony Gonzalez and Austin Eckler talking about a Thursday night football game for 2 minutes. Like, some of those things that were shoehorned in there, it's like, oh, come on. Just, that's a damn pick already.
You mentioned ESPN. They were, like, way behind. NFL Network was getting the pick out much faster than they were. I guess they had some type of delay. And then, I mean, on Twitter, you were almost a pick or two ahead most of the night if you wanted mm-hmm. to get on there and see what's going on. So that's not good. They get that fixed. Really, the best coverage all weekend was Saturday on ESPN, I thought. You had Reese Davis took over to play by play it. Still had Lewis Riddick and Mel Kiper on there, but then they brought McShay over.
Yeah,
for all 7 out. That's
the dream team right there.
Well, that's the crew, because you've got two, you know, draft guys that do this 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You've got Reese Davis, who knows these players very well, and Reese Davis is throwing in little tidbits from because he covers these guys for college. That's what he does full time. And then you have Lewis Riddick, who has a scouting and general manager background, a front office background.
Right.
And so those blend of three guys were really, I thought, the best team of any television coverage. We had three feeds, right? Those three were the best. I would like to see those three together for the full draft. You get the McShay Kiper back and forth. McShay. McShay taking little digs at Kiper. And it was honestly better this year because Kiper wasn't there in person, so he couldn't respond like instantly. So McShay would just, you know, kept digging him and digging him and digging him before he could respond.
It was great.
So that was great. And those three together, I think that's what you want in a draft to me, a draft coverage. You've got a guy who knows these players well.
Mm-hmm.
You've got a guy who's got NFL experience in a front office, what teams are looking for. And then you've got two guys that have covered a bunch of drafts and know a bunch of stuff about all these players. So that's what you really look for in the draft coverage. And them splitting it up, it just – that really bothers me. Like, McShay and Kiper should be on there together for the whole draft.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I don't want to make this just a media critique or anything, but damn it, ESPN, like, the Pittsburgh Steelers are one of the top four more storied franchises in NFL. They pick a kid that played for Pitt in the same stadium as him. He's the first quarterback off the board. And instead of gassing him up, it's like, we're going to immediately go to hand size. It's like, that. I know they talked about it a lot, and you've got to mention it eventually, but can we not just enjoy this dude, like, crying in his dad's arms for a minute? Like, that's a cool story. And what do I think of the pick? I don't know yet. I think if not for Haskins' unfortunate tragic death, they might have gone with Malik Willis just from a we know we can sit him for a year. But now when you've really just got Mitch Trubisky there, you feel like you need the more pro-ready prospect. You've seen him a lot. So it feels like the safest pick. I don't mind it. But, like, I wanted to be at least, like, convince myself for 20 seconds that Kenny Pickett is going to be kicking all kinds of ass, when then you just – it's hard, though. Like, you just look at the long hair, and he doesn't have – he's –
One really good year, and then it's three or four years of,
He just doesn't have the the same swagger that Burrow or Lamar Jackson or any. We didn't get our Baker Mayfield trade, and that was, I think, as big of a surprise as anything. They ended up taking Matt Corral.
Two things here. The hands discourse, right? They got on there and they were showing Booger's disjointed thumb going back and forth about why it's important. And then Lewis Riddick kind of giving examples of why. I mean, that was just peak. That's peak draft combine. That's what it's all about there. So that was awesome. And then I forgot my second point now. So go continue what you're saying.
Baker Mayfield. Yeah. Not good.
Baker. Oh yeah. Here's what it was. The draft, really the first round and then into the second round, it taught us a lesson right here. Number one was like, wide receiver is now one of the most important positions in football. Like, these teams are doing whatever they can to have dudes at wide receiver. They need difference makers on the outside. But it also showed that the NFL thought this class stunk, right?
Yes, yes. I mean,
and part of it is, I think, next year, Nick, they know next year there's some dudes coming at quarterback.
Right.
They know two at clear that they feel pretty good about, and C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young at the top. And then they've got other guys that I think could really develop into something. Obviously, Will Levis being one of those cats.
Mm-hmm. And D.J. Uzan in that mix, Hendon Hooker. Like, there's a good collection of, like, five or six guys where probably half of them are going to end up climbing in that first round.
Right. I mean, the ACC's got a few of them, a few good starting quarterbacks. So, yeah, there's a lot there. I think in this next year's crop of quarterbacks. And so these teams just aren't going to, I don't think, risk the heavy draft capital and get stuck with these guys. They're going to wait. They're going to play the tank game, for lack of a better word, I think. That's why I think the Seahawks are kind of flirting with right now. Do we want to go Baker in here, try to get competitive, and bust our ass to go 8-10? So we can draft 13th next year.
In a tough division, too, you know.
Yeah.
And they held on to DK, too, which.
Yeah. Or do we want to throw Locke out here, see if he can put a decent to get season together? And if he does, then maybe he has some trade value if you go 5-13 or whatever. And then you can trade him off for a six-rounder, and you can pick 5th instead of 14th. Because there's a huge no-man's land there in the NFL. Film, that's a place you don't want to be, and you gotta have the quarterback, and I think that was on display from the jump in this draft, was that the consensus was in the league that they weren't big on these quarterbacks. There's a ton of in the quarterback movement on top of that, like, guys are moving all the time, so you're going to be in position to land a quarterback as well, even if you're not up there in the draft. So all those factors, I think, had people being a little more patient with the quarterback position than they were in the past. Like, if this is 5 years ago, Malik Willis is 12th, probably, right, you know. Right. Kenny Pickett's probably in the top 10 because you have to have them. Now that there's more options and they're looking more further down the road, and teams are not afraid maybe to stink for a year, I think you saw that play out by the willingness to be patient with the quarterback position.
Let's go ahead and get to the bad news before the good news. With the Kentucky football players, because of the four, at one point we thought Darian Kennard was going to be the first guy off the board. At the end of the regular season, you saw some people thinking he was in the first round. At the worst, you thought he was top half of the second. Goes to Senior Bowl, doesn't do very well, and we knew that he would slide some, but still, this is consensus All-American. Those don't grow on trees. And on Friday night, you start looking, you start seeing these guys where an offensive tackle is going off the board, and they're like, well, he's probably a guard, though. I know there was a guy from UCLA that I think went to the Packers. And you started seeing a lot of these guys that had similar descriptions to Kennard going ahead of him. And it really didn't make that much sense at all until he ultimately slid until Saturday, went all the way out of the fourth round before the Chiefs picked him up in the fifth. I know that we're going to be more plugged in. We're more plugged in than most, and that was a shock to us. And I think a lot of it came back to Kennard saying, you know, he wanted people to show another side of him or show more of his personality. And that ultimately, you want to show just enough to get picked, and then you can show them your personality. I think with all that being said, like it, a lot of
this folks, the NFL, we need to remember who we're talking about here.
Yeah. And a lot of people were quick to jump on his COVID takes and his Joe Biden shirt and all that. I don't think it's purely politics. I think there was more to it. And from what I heard of, he was not a pleasant person to be around at Pro Day. And I think he had some interviews that left people kind of like, this guy seems a little different. And when they went to Pro Day, they got confirmation in the worst way. Instead of the other day, he proved them correct. And that's why he slid down a lot of teams' board. And it's unfortunate, but it also goes to show you too, like how much the NFL now, they don't just, it's not 80% tape, 20% eval. It might be flipped the other way now.
Yeah, I think they are valuing that you love football, how you fit within our locker room. Every franchise is different, though, right? I mean, if you're like the Texans, you just need good players. You can't really worry about, you know, if they're going to get along with each other. You need to get good players and then go from there. But if you've got structure at all within your organization and you've got cornerstone pieces, that's a tiebreaker.
Right.
Are they captains? Do they love football? What they bring to the locker room? All that kind of stuff. For Kennard, I think it was this right here. I think you go all the way back this time last year, Nick. Evan Neal was probably seen as a top tackle.
Mm-hmm.
But it was like Ikiwanu and Kennard were kind of right there together as like first round guys. And then Ikiwanu goes, what, top 10? Whoops. And then Kennard falls all the way to the fifth round. When you dig into the Kennard's year, okay, they make an offensive transition. He's supposed to play left tackle. Pro-style scheme comes in. They move him back to right tackle. They're supposed to run wide zone. They don't really want to run wide zone. So what happened there? Why didn't that fit for him? You go to the Senior Bowl, he doesn't play well. I'm just putting it bluntly, at right tackle. Go to the combine, he tests very poorly for a tackle. Testing numbers were better as a guard, but they were still like barely average, a little bit below average when you look at some of the athletic testing. You add that in, it's kind of sounding like probably the meetings didn't go very well with teams. And so I think we got in a situation where as you got into scouting him, a lot of the wide zone teams, which is a good chunk of the league. So any team that runs outside zone, mm-hmm. heavy amount. So thank any guy that would work for McShay, Shanahan, you've got it going on with the Falcons. They're running it. Arthur Smith is kind of running that offense there in Atlanta. Seattle runs it. There's a ton of teams that run it. Like it feels like half the league runs that.
Right.
So that probably took him off the board just completely because they were afraid that the lack of positional athleticism, that's important. His pass pro concern potentially. And he looks like he's kind of struggled running this system last year. So then it gets down to teams that are more gap scheme power running teams. And he just fell on the board. But he ended up in a really good spot, I think. You look at the Chiefs, they traded up to get him. So obviously they saw some value there with him. And the Chiefs starting right guard right now, Nick, is Smith. At Tennessee, had a great career, but he all had a fall in the draft. He had a medical issue people were worried about. I think there was maybe some character concerns potentially. I'm not sure about that, but I know there was a medical issue. He falls to the sixth round. He comes in, starts for the Chiefs as a rookie. He was one of the best right guards in football last year. And you look at their top backup, who's Andrew Wiley, a swing right guard, right tackle, has 1 year left on his contract. Kennard's coming in to take over for that guy and be their top backup at right guard, right tackle. It's a power scheme for the Chiefs. They don't really run outside zone. It's counter, it's power, and it's, you know, keep Mahomes clean with a heavy drop back passing game. I think that's exactly where he needed to go. I think the Chiefs have shown a track record to succeed with old linemen like him. Just last year, Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith were both rookies. Neither was a first-round pick. They both had great seasons. So he's entering, I think, a good place for him and a place where he can succeed. So, yes, he dropped, and that was a big surprise. But at the end of the day, it could be a best-case scenario situation for him because he's going to a good franchise –
Mm-hmm.
And he's joining an offensive line with players like him that have succeeded there.
Yeah, and Trey Smith, he was one of those dudes that was highly regarded until he had the medical issue. And so, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. The Chiefs are a good team, too. That always helps. And
yeah, I mean, he's a good training camp away from being their swing guard tackle,
mm-hmm.
potentially, and playing a big role for a Super Bowl contender. And so that's a good spot for him to start his career.
And I feel like, in general, there's a lot of good fits for the Cats in this draft. There's not a whole lot of, oh, God, he's in trouble. And we'll kind of work our way back towards the top with Luke Fortner, where I don't remember if that was a prediction here or if that was a group text thing, but I remember when the Jag center retired, and you mentioned that there can be your spot. Get Trevor Lawrence, his center for the future. And Fortner climbed up the boards. You know, I spoke with him and put a lot of the quotes in a post on Monday on KSR about it. But it was, I mean, he even said that some of the scouts of the Senior Bowl were like, yeah, we got to regrade you because you're just a completely different player. He really helped himself this year at center. Not only the tape he put out, but he's also a good interview kind of guy. He's got the right measurables and now is going to a place where, I mean, I'm not saying he's a shoehorn and he just was walking into a starting spot, but if he does all the right things, he could be a day one starter down there in Jacksonville.
Intangibles are big with him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Captain, three position versatility there. Smart. On the line. He tough, durable, mm-hmm. played through some injuries, has really good center tape, you know, played really, really well as a center. He was the third true center off the board. After Linderbaum goes to the Ravens and Cam Jurgens goes to the Eagles. And he's going into the spot, Nick, where it's, you know, great situation. Brandon Linder, like we just talked about, just retired. And then they've got Tyler Shatley's kind of a veteran who's been a key reserve for them.
Mm-hmm.
He's 31 years old. They just signed him to like a 2-year, like $7 million deal. So obviously he's going to be a player for them next year. But it could be a guy. Maybe Fortner doesn't start right away as a rookie. But you can kind of learn from him.
Mm-hmm.
But if Fortner hits the ground running, right, you don't want Trevor Lawrence to have three centers in three seasons. Could be a thing where if he's ready, just go ahead and give him the keys and let them kind of build a rapport as they, you know, are in the middle of this rebuild. Because stability is big here for Lawrence after that train wreck he just dealt with Urban Meyer in year one. And so if you can stabilize that center position, I think that would be big for him. And so for Luke, I think it's a great opportunity, right? He could be the Jeff Saturday to Peyton Trevor Manning. Lawrence. Trevor Lawrence, Peyton Manning, he could be Jeff Saturday to Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah.
And so it's, I think it's just a great spot for him to go in. Doug Peterson has a versatile running game. They do some outside zone. They also do more some power stuff, so they're not married to one way or the other. I think that's good for Luke. He succeeded in all of that at Kentucky. I think it's a very good spot for him. Getting a team up with a quarterback like that early in his career could be big. And he checks a lot of boxes I think that franchise is needing. It can come in and be a cornerstone of that offensive line. And for that Jaguars organization, that Nick, if you look at it, like if you look at that division, AFC South, I know we like the jab at the Jaguars, but like, what quarterback are you taking over him in that division? You got Matt Ryan. You got Davis Mills.
Matt Ryan is
– And you got Ryan Tannehill.
Yeah, and the Titans are already preparing for life after Tannehill. He's probably got this year and he's done.
In this free agency, Jaguars overspent on a lot of guests. People are going to make fun of that Christian Kirk signing.
But you got to spend money if you're the Jags.
They have competency right now,
yeah,
at least, where they could be kind of a surprise team, I think, this year if Lawrence takes a big step forward, mainly because they have competency on the roster and they've got a grown-up in the room.
Yeah, so a Super Bowl winning coach, you know.
And that could be – because you can see the Jags just emerging as like that team in the AFC South. I could really see because they got the quarterback. Now, I'm big on Lawrence. If you're not as big on him as I am, you won't believe that. But that could be a great situation for Luke Fortner to be in. I mean, I would be really excited if I was him going down there and teaming up with – a good quarterback. We got a new regime. We're in a winnable division. There's a lot to like there, and there's a wide open spot for you to come in and potentially start right away as a rookie.
Yeah, and the Jags, they showed a little bit of fight down the stretch, you know, a little bit of winning in spite of their coach.
Beat the Colts at the end, knocking out playoffs.
Exactly. And you can say the same thing about the next team up, the Detroit Lions, where they were the best. They're one of the best bad teams I can ever remember, where it was like
fun to watch, right?
Yeah, and they had almost no talent except for the receiver's name who escapes my brain.
Ross St. Brown.
Yeah, who really came along at the end. But they didn't have a lot, and they were just biting kneecaps, staying in games. They were losing heartbreaking fashion time and time again, but they showed a lot of fight. They went with a safe pick with Aiden Hutchinson, the second overall. And that's my question for you. Josh Pascal, he was not expecting it. He had the formal meeting with the Lions. But, you know, when the team's top pick's an edge, you're not necessarily thinking they're going to go with another edge there. I'm curious what your thoughts are, because in his mind, like, that's kind of a good thing. You're going in at the same time. Some might see it as a bad thing, though, where you're almost kind of competing for the same spot. But I think in practice, Pascal could be third defensive end and, you know, maybe get some defensive tackle reps, get some pass rush. Ops on third down as well at that tackle spot. So I think from a culture kind of like what Dan Campbell wants their defense to do, Josh does that. I just don't know how the opportunity with Hutchinson there does make things, I think, a little bit more difficult for him.
Number one, like, I kind of want to ask on what the Lions are doing right now. From a roster building perspective, 2 years in a row, you just get rock stone pieces on both lines of scrimmage. Penei Sewell and Aiden Hutchinson. Very high floors. Maybe the ceiling isn't as high as other prospects, but those guys are going to be, I think, multi-time pro bowlers. And you got them on both sides of the line of scrimmage. They didn't overspend for a quarterback right here. They're being patient. They're taking the rebuild. And they had a really good draft. I think they got some really good pieces here. Jameson Williams is – like that, yeah. I'm excited to see him team up with Amon-Ra St. Brown. Now I think that could be fun. DeAndre Swift's a fun little tailback they have in the backfield. TJ Hawkinson's one of the best tight ends in football.
Goff's serviceable and can at least get you through this year until, right. You know, if you have another bad year, you've got quarterbacks to choose from next year.
And they're deciding to build the defense from the line of scrimmage out. And so they get Hutchinson. They spend a number two overall pick on him. They run kind of this 3-4 hybrid front, which is, I think, where Pascal is going to be best utilized at as a guy who can play 4-4, play some 5 technique. And then in pass rush situations, he's going to slide down and probably play some 3 technique as a situational rusher. Now, you look at the roster right now, there is a lot of bodies there they have on the defensive line, but a lot of those guys are probably going to be churned out after a year or two because of this new regime. They're getting their guys in here. So, obviously, Aiden Hutchinson is going to be kind of like the J.J. Weaver, okay, in their defense.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of that stand-up outside rusher slash outside linebacker who they're going to slide inside, and they're going to move him around a lot, I would imagine. But Josh can be that guy opposite of him, right? That 3-4 defensive end who can really set the tone as an edge setter in the run game, can really provide value on – first down and second down, and then where he's really going to make his big money is how he develops as a pass rusher there on third down. Mm-hmm. When he's lined up inside, can he beat guards and can he get interior pressure? Can he influence the pocket? So that's something to watch for, but I think it's a good spot for him. There's not going to be huge expectations at first, but there's going to be a role for him as a rookie and as a second-year player. And I think it's a good fit playing with somebody potentially like Hutchinson who could be just a magnet to attention, right?
Yeah.
If he turns into like a elite rusher, and then that opens up one-on-ones for you on the backside where you can really make some moves. And then maybe if you stack up a 10, 11, 12 sack year or a bunch of tackle for loss year, then you could get to free agency and you could potentially get a pretty big payday. So I think it's a good spot Pascal's going into. General manager Brad Holmes there, I think he knows what he's doing. Seems like he's doing a good job building the roster. Their culture with Dan Campbell. and they're, you know, we'll see what they do when they get that quarterback. But you look at that division, like how much longer Rodgers going to be around. Yeah,
Bears are just the Bears.
I mean, we can Vikings get into the Bears.
They're spiraling.
We can get into the Bears, but that their strategy and their what they're doing is just, I mean, it's awful. And I feel bad for Justin Fields. It's going to be a freaking train wreck watching them play offense this year. So in the you Vikings, we'll see. They've got a new regime in there. But what the Lions are doing right now, I think it's there's a lot to be excited about there in Detroit. They've got a bright future as of right now. If they don't mess it up, they're still going to make some more steps, but they're in the right direction.
To your point about Hutchinson, it's the Boogie Watson capitalizing on Josh Allen being there, where you know he's able to clean up a lot of the pressures that Josh Allen was providing up in the pocket. So even though Detroit and Jacksonville, they both have that kind of stink on their franchise, it seems like things are trending in the right direction. Each team now has two cats on it. Stenberg was working out this offseason at UK, some rehabbing a knee injury. And then, of course, Josh Allen, he got his option picked up by the Jags. So a couple of teams for the Big Blue Nation to really keep their eyes on moving forward. We're going to get to Wando Robinson and more. But first, a break from our sponsors. The last but not least, the first off the board, Wandale Robinson is a New York football giant and might be tough sledding this year. But once you get Daniel Jones out of there, you get somebody who knows what the hell they're doing. A lot of early mock drafts, I even have Will Levis going to the G-men.
Yeah.
But which we can get to more later. But I think the point you made in your post Friday night on KSR, Brian Daboll is the ideal guy to get Robinson the ball where he's most effective, and that's making plays in space.
Yeah, I'm going to get Wandell just a minute or a second here. But that Will Levis comp is coming, and that's coming because he's going to get compared to Josh Allen.
Yeah.
All year. Like, this is – it's going to happen here over the summer. Like, Josh Allen light. Will Levis has got Josh Allen traits. You're going to hear all of that. And Brian Daboll came from the Bills. He's now with the Giants.
I found four mock drafts with Levis in the top 10 of 2023. Now, you know,
that's going to be a very popular mock there.
It's a long way away, but a lot of he showed some stuff at his pro day. Teams have been watching more film on Kentucky. Now they have more guys, and they're playing against a bunch of dudes like that Georgia defense. That Will Levis hype. It ain't slowing down anytime soon. So, you know what? Now's the time to have fun. It's kind of like what we said when Cats were 6-0. We're talking college football playoff scenarios. Well, let's enjoy it, because right now Kentucky has a guy with the tools to be the second best quarterback in the SEC. Now, of course, you got to turn that hype into production, but he's got more depth at receiver this year. He's got a year into the system. Like, there's a lot there. There's a lot there for a lot of potential to continue dreaming big about that date in December in Atlanta.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And it's going to be an offseason full of that talk, right? There's a chance Kentucky's got to do a lot of special things here. And we can get into that all summer, really.
Yeah.
But right now, Wando Robinson with the Giants, it just makes sense. Daboll's one of the better offensive play callers in the NFL. He did a good job in Buffalo showing he could play to his players' strengths. Did a good job of developing Josh Allen. I think he's going to put Daniel Jones in good situations. I think he might see maybe a career year from Daniel Jones. That's a low bar to clear, obviously. But that the Giants just turned down his fifth-year option, so it seems like they're probably going to be willing to move on after the season, but we'll see how it shakes out. For Robinson, I think when you look at Daboll's past, they really use slot receiver very efficiently. Cole Beasley was very good in Buffalo under Daboll. It really took off in Buffalo after they got that true outside ball winner, high-level player in Stephon Diggs. That's not available in New York right now. So it's going to have to be a kind of a manufactured passing game. But they're going to use Wandell, I think, in right situations. Condensed formations, pre-snap motions, creating free releases for him off the line of scrimmage and using him in concepts where he can win regularly and getting the ball in space. And so from that aspect, I think that's really all you wanted for Wandell at the next level. You wanted him to get in a place with a creative mind and maybe an offense that would be able to force feed him touches while he still develops as a route runner, one-on-one in space. And so I think Daboll will be able to do that. And you look at the Giants roster, due to the fact that they don't have really any outside ball winners right now, they're going to have to get very creative with how they get their slot receivers open or their gadget type players. You look at Sterling Shepard, who's entering the last year of his contract, 30 years old, so he's probably on the way out. And you got Kadarius Toney with Wandell. Mm-hmm. It's two kind of gadget guys you can do a lot of unique stuff with. I think it's going to be fun seeing them kind of scheme that up, see what they can do to get stuff open, and maybe using those guys as a way to get maybe Saquon Barkley some more room to operate. And so for that, I think it's very exciting for Wandell Robinson stepping into that situation. He's going to get some action there as a rookie. Mm-hmm. He's going to be I think them drafting him that early shows that they valued him pretty highly, because that was above the consensus of where we thought he landed on draft boards.
Yep.
So he's going to be a huge piece of that young core that they're building. They just got the cornerstone tackle on Evan Neal, and yeah, Rondell Robinson is going to be a big piece of how they build out that offense moving forward. And whoever the quarterback of the future there is in New York, Wandell Robinson is going to be a big part of his success, because they are invested in him.
Yeah, and I believe the Giants, didn't they draft an edge too kind of early? Is that right? Am I?
You, the Jets did. They got
Jermaine Johnson. Yeah.
Right. The Giants, they had three top 50 picks. No, you're right. You're right. Excuse me. They got Kayvon Thibodeau.
That's
Kayvon
what it was. Yeah.
Thibodeau, Evan Neal, Wandell Robinson. They had two top 10 picks.
Those two top 10 picks, they were seen as the number one overall at one point in the process. Right. So the New York teams did pretty well, I think, generally speaking. Yeah.
They got two general managers that know what they're doing, I think, with Joe Shane coming from Buffalo and then Joe Douglas, who came from Philly. I think both those guys know what they're doing. It's just going to be – they both got a nail quarterback. I think both those teams are building good rosters, but the quarterback is a huge question mark there in New York.
And speaking of New York, we mentioned earlier, Yusuf Corker, he went undrafted but signed with the G-men as an undrafted free agent. I've quote tweeted some of those, but his name's Kent Platt. He does a relative athletic score, where it's like, so what does all of this data mean that we get at the combine? And he does a good way of synthesizing it into a score out of 1 to 10 and comparing it among their peers.
Color-coding.
Yeah.
Green,
yeah.
Yellow, red.
Yeah. Green. Yeah. It's green, yellow, red, good, bad. And Corker, you know, outside of his bench press, was pretty modest in all of the athletic measurables, which is, you know, when you're going for a safety, you want that. But I still think with his intangibles as a 2-year captain, you know, like he's a mature adult. I mean, I'm pretty sure he got married prior to the season. He's got a couple of kids. I think he's got a good shot of finding a nice, yeah, I feel like this is a soft landing spot, you know, where he can really, if he doesn't find the field on defense, he certainly can on special teams. I know Quandre Mosley could probably say the same thing as a member of the Dallas Cowboys. So there's something in that Carolina Panthers organization. They like the Kentucky defensive lineman. They took a flyer on Phil Hoskins late last year, and then they signed Marquand McCall as an undrafted free agent this year. If there's one lesson that I want some of the Kentucky guys to learn, be careful who the hell you're listening to, because I don't know if it's all of it, but I certainly think it plays a role. And McCall and Rosenthal were both fringe guys, and they both just didn't do anything at the combine. They worked out, but they didn't do any of the testing. And I just don't know. I mean, we mentioned it earlier with Kennard, but maybe you showed too much. But if you're a fringe guy, it's your tryout, you know? And I just
stick out somehow.
Yeah. And I just don't understand, like, because then you become somebody that they're not even watching. You have to give the scouts a reason to watch you. And if you're on the sideline, it's moot, you know, all that's moot. So I hope that some of the guys on UK's roster learn that lesson and don't just skip any of the other pre-draft stuff, because I think if you're in that position that they were, it's important. It's important to show that you're willing to do whatever it takes to get picked.
Yeah. When you look at the Giants too deep right here, Nick, you pull it up right now in the secondary, safety is a huge position, very thin there, starter wise. Outside of Xavier McKinney and Julian Love, who are the projected starters, the only guy plugged in after them is Dane Belton, which was a 4th-round pick out of Iowa, who is probably better as kind of like a box nickel safety So for Corker, like, he's going to have a good chance to make the team here because they need depth there at safety. So that could actually be a pretty good spot for him. I know, you know, you'd probably rather get drafted, but you're stepping into a position room that needs some help in a rebuilding franchise. So they need bodies. And so I think it's a great chance for him to go in there and potentially make the 53-man there in training camp. Justin Rigg, Cincinnati, signed. Mm-hmm. Great spot for Justin Rigg. The Bengals lost C.J. Uzomah to free agency. He's with the Jets now. And they didn't draft a tight end. So they got three guys that that are probably sharpied into on the 53-man roster, but they like to carry four tight ends there in Cincinnati. They do use a good dose of 12 personnel, so they like to have some depth there. Rigg, there's going to be about five guys he's competing with right now. He apparently, reports were that he had a very, very impressive workout. A last-minute local workout Cincinnati does for local prospects right before the draft. They got him on their radar. Mm-hmm. They signed him quickly after the draft was over. He's going to have a good shot at making the 53-man roster, but he's going to have a great shot at sticking around their practice squad, signing on the practice squad and hanging around there for a couple years. So for him, I think it's close to home. I think that's a good spot for him. For him, I think it's all going to be what kind of value can he bring you on special teams? Does he have the athleticism to be on the punt team, to be on the punt return team potentially?
Right, yeah.
So that's going to be the big question, I think, for him. But from a blocking standpoint, I think he could fit right in. So that's those two guys right there. I think they're going to have good chances to be on a, you know, we could be watching Red Zone and see them pop up on the tube.
Yeah.
Come up exactly November, right. Sunday next year or this coming year.
Big picture draft stuff. One story that I was consumed by that made more sense. Actually, I'm still a little baffled by it, but two guys really fell far because of injury concerns. One of them has much more serious injury concerns, and that's Clemson wide receiver Justin Ross, who was a superstar in the making when broke his neck, broke his back. He had to have surgery.
He had a spine, some type of spinal cord injury.
Yeah.
It was like in a fusion surgery.
Right. So, like, obviously that's going to draw some concerns. He signed as a free agent with the Chiefs, which that – I mean, if you're going to be an undrafted free agent at receiver, go to Kansas City, you know. So, like, I feel like that's a nice spot for him. The N'Kobe Dean, though, that was the one where, I mean, five defensive players.
What is Georgia, going on here?
They went in the first round. He was the best player of them all. And you're like, okay, well, he slid to day two. Somebody's going to get a steal in the second round. And, you know, middle linebackers, they aren't what they used to be as far as valued. So, I could at least, like, okay, well, I was talking to our guy, Trevor Kelce. Trevor was like, he was loving the Eagles draft.
And yeah, I would too if I was him.
He's like, AJ Brown. I mean, this is awesome. Like, this is the best draft ever. If we could somehow get Dean, I might just call it quits. And by God, they got him. So the weird part, though, like it, is that all of these reporters were rattling off this laundry list of injuries that he wasn't going to need surgery for. And then Dean, after he got picked by Eagles, was like, no, I'm going to be at rookie minicamp. I'm good. I'm healthy. So I don't know what the hell is going on here.
Yeah, that was – I'm thinking it was a thing where the doctors would have preferred him to have surgery. They didn't want him to play through it. Maybe it's a thing where he doesn't want to go under the knife for it. So mm-hmm. He's going to try to play. I don't know because there's a lot it's there.
Bizarre.
Size concerns too there, Nick.
Shoulder. There's a lot of things.
Yeah. There are size concerns with him too. But, yeah, there was guys at the position going over him that were just absurd.
The Montana State guy that the Falcons picked? You're like, what? What were we doing here?
At no point last year was Quay Walker better than N'Kobe Dean. Quay Walker goes first round the Packers. Now, Quay Walker's got the measurables that just Dean doesn't, right? 6'4", mm-hmm. 240 pounds, can really run. And then Dean didn't test, so there was rumors that he wasn't going to test very well. So teams probably docked that against him because he didn't test. So, yeah, that was just a weird development. But, man, I love that Eagles draft. I swear. I love all these. They got five players plus A.J. Brown in the draft, and all these dudes can play. Jordan Davis going to come in and be a space eater. Cam Jurgens going to back up Kelce for 1 year and then be their starting center. N'Kobe Dean's probably going to start at linebacker for them as a rookie. Grant Calcaterra can play at tight end. Kyron Johnson is an intriguing off-ball linebacker slash guy that can do some edge rush type stuff. So, a big fan of what GM Howie Roseman did there. The Eagles, like, people forget that team made the playoffs last year. They snuck in.
Forget that.
But they made the playoffs. Yeah. And now Jalen Hurts has the pieces. Here, you look at A.J. Brown, Devontae Smith, Quez Watkins. They got the receivers. They got a strong running game. They got a good O-line. Like, it's the year for Jalen Hurts. He needs to strike now. If he doesn't, then they're going to be in the QB market, and they're going to be a very attractive place for QB maybe looking to move. So the Eagles, buy stock on them too in the NFC East. You're seeing some franchises here, I think, in the draft that are really coming on and that are getting close. They got the roster. We just need the quarterback. And they're an example of maybe you don't need the quarterback first. Maybe the quarterback's the last piece you add to be a contender. But, yeah, big fan of what the Eagles did. Trevor Kelce should be excited.
We're nearing the end of this podcast. I'm wanted to ask you if you had any more draft takes before we called
it. The Bears are just, I mean, a poop fecta of a draft. Just absolutely horrendous. You've got Justin Fields there. Just being hung out to dry. At least the Jaguars fixed their issues, right? At least they went out and like, all right, even if we're getting competency so we don't ruin this guy early in his career.
Right.
Maybe not going to win it on his rookie contract, but maybe if he really takes off, then we can go second. The Bears, man, they go out, make it a coaching state. They hire a defensive head coach, first-time head coach. They go out, and then they go, they don't have a first-round pick, so they go, they got two top 50 picks, go cornerback, safety. The third round pick is Velus Jones, who's old, 6 year senior. Primarily going to be a punt returner. You know, it's not going to be a guy that can really help. They totally passed on George Pickens, who could have been exactly what they needed. Yeah. A big outside X receiver.
Steelers got after one. That, I like that pick. Yeah.
Wait to the fifth round, get a FCS tackle. Wait to the sixth round, get a Mountain West tackle. And then just load up on defense in between the draft. But really, you got two top 50 picks where you can really do something, help your guy out. You go defense first for your defensive head coach there in Chicago. On brand, Bears think you need to win with defense running game. You look at the roster, everybody ragged on the Bengals last year for giving up sacks. The Bears gave up more sacks than the Bengals. And they didn't do anything to address that offensive line here in the offseason, really. Lost one of their better players to free agency. So it's going to – Justin Fields, I feel for him because that was a guy, you know, upside was high, but everybody knew he had to be in the right system and you had to really do a great job of building around him. You kind of had to do what the Chargers are doing with Justin Herbert. Give him all the pieces, and then when you have pieces, it's going to open up all of his talent. For now, he's just – I mean, he's up you-know-what's creek without a paddle. And the Bears, I think it's going to get ugly for him this year. And it's going to be like seeing the takes on that. It's going to be kind of unfair to him because the supporting cast stinks around there. So I hated what the Bears did. Patriots had a weird draft. I don't think they really addressed their needs. Cardinals, I thought that was a weird trade for Hollywood Brown.
Oh, no, get another short guy. Like that was a let's just try to keep Kyler Murray happy. So we're going to get his old teammate. That was weird.
They have Zach Ertz already. They have a good tight end. They get Trey McBride for Cliff's spread offense. Like, they're not going to run much two tight end set. So they have one pick outside the top. Well, they didn't have any picks inside the top 50. They have one at 55, and they spend it on a tight end, a guy who's not even going to start for them. So I thought that was weird.
Yeah, that was bizarre. Doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But you had – your, I don't want to say one shining moment, but NFL draft, it's right in your wheelhouse. This week, it's my wheelhouse. We got the horses running beneath the Twin Spires this week. I'm fired up. We're about to have the Oaks and Derby draw. I haven't actually got to see the horses in person doing radio shows there Tuesday through Thursday. If y'all want to check them out, Kentucky Roll Call, 7 to 9 a.m., Big X Sports Radio. So I haven't got an Oaks horse yet. That's going to be a really deep field. The horse Nest that won the Ashland looked good, but there's a ton. Echo Zulu is a badass. That race is going to be a really good race. Might be able to get a horse at a nice price at like 5 to 1 to come in. But the Derby, I try to get talked into these closers every year because watching a horse like mine, that bird, come from the back is just thrilling. But that hasn't happened in 10 years. Since they started this Derby point system, it's all about front runners or horses that are right off the pace that you got to be first or second going around the final turn. That's the way it's been since 2013 when Orb closed. That was the last closer. Zandon and Mo Donegal are the two big closers. I have a feeling I'm going to make myself put Chad Brown Zandon in my try box because I'll just feel like an idiot if I don't. But really, I just think it's going to – I think the chalk's going to hold. Epicenter is won back-to-back races. He's a front runner. Asmussen's never won the Derby. This feels like the right one. And if I can get him at 5-1, I might put a lot of money on him right before the race goes off. But it'll probably be more like 3. I'm curious what the Baffert horses are going to do, Taiba and Messier, just because Baffert horses, they always wreck my damn trot. They just take money away from me. And I hate West Coast horses because they only race. Taiba's in his third race. And I mean, he's only in his third race. He just beat 6 horses and you're going to run a 20 horse field. But I get so scared. I feel like I've got to bet him too. I don't know what I'm going to do with those. And ultimately, as far as long shot plays go, Cyberknife won me some money in the Arkansas Derby. He's a little erratic. If they can straighten him out, I actually do think that Brad Cox horse, either that one or Zozo's, one of those two, I'm pretty confident is going to be on the board, but I got to see him to confirm it. I don't know. I'll probably end up tweeting out my picks the day of, but I thought I'd share a little bit of horse racing insight for our listeners. And I hate being boring, but it feels like Epicenter is going to be the one.
Nick, are these beer prices? Are these drink prices? Are they always that high?
Dude, opening night sucks. So I'm a track regular. The Saturday night race to open up Derby weekend.
Like, was this past weekend.
Yeah,
right.
It's a great idea, but they charge you an arm and a leg to get in. It's like $25 to get in, which is $29 on Derby. Like, I mean, that at least you're getting a concert and stuff out of it. But yeah, $12 beers. It's outrageous. And I was always a flask guy, and I mean, I'm still going to bring one in. Last year when it was a lighter crowd, I probably bought 8 beers, and but you know what? I didn't have line. So I was like, you know what? I'll pay $12 if I don't have to wait in line for a cold beer. But it is killer. You gotta win some money to be able to afford to drink.
That's like New York City prices.
I know. It's crazy. Absolutely nuts.
I think it's like, trying to think of the last, like, I think it was like $8-9 for a beer at the last big thing I went to. Mm-hmm. That sounds about right.
Which, like, I really do think if you keep it in single digits, it's so much more palatable. It's and there's not a,
yeah,
nine and $3 isn't a huge difference. But if I can hand somebody a 20 and just be done with it, you know, have my 2 beers, you tip them a couple bucks, you feel better about it. So that part does stink, but it's not.
I saw that and I was just like, has it always been that expensive? I know it's like expensive to go to Derby.
$17.
What's it cost to get in the infield nowadays?
So it's $29 for Derby, and see, I mooch and use my media pass, but my wife will get the Oaks. My wife does the Oaks Derby. She will get the package deal like a week before the prices go up, and it's like $100 for both. So, like, you know, that's not too terribly bad. I think the move though, Luckett, if you want to just have the most fun possible as you can during Derby week at the track, paying it's like $85 or $90 all you can eat and drink on the front side on Derby. Like that's mm-hmm. I did it last year, and the only fun I didn't have is I felt like I needed to eat my way to make my money's worth. So I just like I got
gorge yourself.
Yeah. Oh, I got gored. I drank about 10 beers and I had 17 chicken fingers, you know, like it just kind of wrecked it. But I do think that's a fun time. It's a good day.
I'm looking forward to you making the news again.
Oh yeah, that's fair. Come on.
I hope the weather, I mean, it's not gonna be hot, but it's not gonna be terrible at least.
Right now. Probably a little bit of rain.
You're gonna be able to enjoy being outside.
Yeah, right. So it should have a little bit of everything. I'm pumped. I'm happy we're doing this podcast on Monday because, man, it's gonna be like pulling teeth doing any work to get to Thursday. But my God, we're gonna have some fun out there, and hopefully everybody wins some money this weekend. It's a wonderful time in the bluegrass. You can feel that buzz in the city of Louisville, Luckett. Everybody's excited for the Derby.
Yeah, yeah. There's a pep in the step right now, I would say, here in the Derby City.
Man, that's great. Well, folks, this has been an enjoyable episode of Live in Personnel. We're gonna be back next week and maybe get a little bit more into the SEC, dive into some of the overarching themes from spring balls around the gamut. But until then, happy Derby, everybody. Go Cats, go Kroger.